Garrett Ilsen here, your celeb expert and your celeb savant. Celeb Savant is a weekly entertainment show. We have long-form career retrospective type interviews with celebrities, singers, actors, and industry experts. Jonathan Butler is a singer, songwriter, and guitarist who leads a life a few can imagine. Born in South Africa under the shadow of apartheid and raised in poverty, Butler was the first non-white artist to be played on South African radio and appear on national television. At 13, Jonathan's talents caught the eyes and ears of the British record producer Clive Calder. He was signed to Calder's Jive Records, and the rest is history. Jonathan's first single broke down racial barriers, becoming the first song by a black artist played by white radio stations in South Africa, and won the South African equivalent to a Grammy. His commitment to his craft came to fruition with his self-titled debut album, which received a Grammy nomination for the pop hit Lies. An instrumental Going Home earned him another Grammy nomination, and the mid-tempo ballad Sarah Sarah confirmed Butler's place in popular music. Jonathan continues to release music and perform to sold-out audiences around the world. Up next on Celeb Savant, we've got Jonathan Butler. Where do we find you in the world? How are you doing and what's happening in your life?
Man, you can find me, I'm in LA. I'm in Calabasas. It used to be called Color Blacklist. We used to call it Color Blacklist because there were no black people here when we started coming here, but it's now it's like, you know, celebrity, you know, black NBA, basketball, football stars.
Yeah.
You hear their cars coming up and down the street.
And how are you doing?
Man, I'm doing very good, man. Getting older, you know?
Yeah.
That's for sure. That's one thing that doesn't change.
Yes.
It's time and age. But I'm good, brother. I'm really good.
So let's rewind. Let's take it all the way back. And it's a many-year journey. So the hybrid version or the few-minute version of the Jonathan Butler story in the entertainment world.
Well, what can I tell you? A little boy who grew up in Belgravia Estate, Athlone, in Cape Town.
Yeah.
One of 12, actually one of 17, I've learned of late. The last time I was in Cape Town this year, in February, in March, I was there for like 6 weeks, I think. Yeah. And I had my brothers and sisters over, you know, so we all were just eating and chatting. And turns out that we were 17 kids.
Oh, my word.
Yeah. But I'm the baby and who's 61 and my oldest is 81.
Okay.
So, I grew up in Belgravia, you know, I think my earliest memories of Belgravia was kind of short lived because the next thing I knew, I was whisked away in a car all the way to Durban when I was like six or seven. I was whisked away to Durban. And there in Durban, I sang at a club, a nightclub called the Casino in the city. And I met some beautiful, great musicians. You know, I remember being so in awe of these musicians. And so, but I grew up in Durban and Overport, West Road. Mm-hmm. And then I also grew up in Johannesburg.
Okay.
My first stop as a young boy was Fordsburg. And I was with the Golden City Dixies. I was with this huge play, you know. And this play would travel from city to city for like 6 months at a time, you know, and play all the city halls. And it was quite an amazing experience, you know, because we actually lived in the theater where we performed. That was our accommodation.
Oh, wow. You know? Okay.
Yeah. So the ladies would sleep like on the stage with the curtains closed and
the men would
sleep in the auditorium. And so it was kind of like a roadshow, a family affair roadshow, but it was well known, you know, in every city from Cape Town to Windhoek to Angola, Botswana. I grew up with quite a hell of a story, musically speaking, starting out very young, age 5. And mother and father was musicians too, my brothers, my sisters. And the legacy of the Butlers is my niece and nephews and cousins are all in music. They do the carnival, the Cape Carnival every year. It's called the Butler initiative or the Butler Project, and they kind of they've taken the mantle and sort of run with it, you know, keeping the Butler name alive in Cape Town through the carnival experience.
So now, how did the journey of being in that play and then result you to moving overseas? I think you were in the UK first and then
Yeah.
America. Let's fill those gaps in.
First of all, as a little boy, I actually performed locally at in Cape Town. I also sang in Malay choirs. I sang one when my parents discovered that I could sing like the rest of the siblings. I think they were quite shocked that I could sing as well as I did as a 5-year-old, you
Yeah.
know, and I was very confident. Like once I started, I would be shy. But
Yes.
once I get into it, it's you can't stop me. I signed up for Carnival. My father was in Carnival. My eldest brother, Leslie, I mean Cecil, was in Carnival. So I loved the Carnival experience, and we competed. So I did a lot of competitions with the Carnival, and also sang in the Malay choirs where you compete at the City Hall, you know. And I won like several first prize trophies, which I don't know where and why in the hell's name my mother never kept them. But it was such was my family, you know, all these earthly treasures didn't really matter much, I think. I sort of became a little household name in Cape Town because I also then sang in cabaret and shows. There was a club, a nightclub in Athlone on Voelstraat, and it used to be called the Gold Finger Lounge. So I sang on Sunday nights cabaret. I would sing there. So I became like a household name in Cape Town. And that's what sort of got me auditioning for the Golden City Dixies. This man, I don't want to mention his name, but he auditioned me to, he was the owner and director, producer of the play. And, as a matter of fact, I've never really seen a white man in my whole life. When this man showed up at my mother's doorstep, I literally ran away. I ran away. Never seen a white man before. I worked and sang in his play for years, you know, until I was probably 12. And then by that time, I'd gotten back home, and then I started singing with the Rockets, actually. Started performing with the Rockets. I was probably the youngest member of the Rockets. And singing in clubs with bands and stuff. And then I was discovered by Cl Clive Calder, who's was the owner of Jive Records, and Ralph Simon. And so they signed me and flew me to Joburg. And when I got to Joburg, I stayed at my sister-in-law's house in River Lee. So then I started making records for Clive Calder at Jive Records. And the first gold record, can you see behind me?
Yes.
You see? These were from 1974
Wow.
and 75. Yeah. And then right here in my hand, this thing is my Sari Award
Okay.
from 1975. So
Such
I have
a small thing.
it's a small thing, but what a big statement for me.
Yes.
Because I remember the night so vividly how it impacted the whole country
Yes.
consciously, politically, that he is the first black kid to win a Sari Award in this all white room.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, there were some black artists there, but you know, I won this award as the best new artist. So I keep it here
Of course, yes.
as a reminder. And these gold
Yes.
records, besides the ones that I have, these three right here and this little Sari Award, it really means so much to me. And so once I got signed to Clive and Ralph, I did a lot of touring, did a lot of recordings and stuff like that. And then I grew up, my voice changed, and they had a bigger vision. They wanted to expand Jive Records to UK. And once they established themselves in the UK, I did some demos and communicated with them through my demos and sent them some work, you know, as some songs. And they decided to sign me, give me a deal in London. And the deal was basically kind of like, if it doesn't work, you can go back. But I remember when I signed the contract, Clive took the contract and said, "You see this paper? You'll never see him again." You know, and so I was signed to Clive since I was a teenager, man, for years, many years. And then Jive, I did had great success with on Jive UK, writing great songs for Tom Jones, for George Benson, Willie Jackson. God, I wrote for Pointer Sisters, Patti LaBelle, Regina Bell. I wrote a lot of songs, and sort of developed my chops as a songwriter, and then did this double album, came out, you know, Lies and all that stuff. And when that went platinum and top five gold records and Grammy nominations, and it was it's been quite a journey.
You mentioned that you've written a lot of songs for other artists. What's the difference between when you're writing for other artists and when you write for yourself? Is it easier for yourself, or how is that process different for each?
Well, writing for other people gives me a chance to look into their soul, so to speak, and listen to their tone in my mind. You know, I can hear their tone of voice, and I can say, look, I can start something and hear Patty's voice, Patti LaBelle's voice, and I'm going like, oh man, I can hear George Benson's voice in my head and go, oh man, this will be a great kind of song for him. You got to be able to take yourself outside of your body and think about what that other person, like for my wife, I'd like to write something for her, but I already heard something, you know, something from like the 80s, a song that written by Earl Klugh, Living Inside Your Love. And I'm like, 'cause she's a violin, she plays violin.
Yes.
So I'm like, oh, this melody would be beautiful. It's about like having a different objective, not just thinking about you, or write a song for me and then maybe I'll give it to you.
Yeah.
That may not be the way forward, I think. And collaboration has really helped me a lot. Collaborating with people has helped me also understand who the artist is I'm writing for, you know, because they can help me. My partner, my writing partner can help. Mm. I think some of my best successes has always been collaborating with people. And I always try to encourage young musicians and artists, don't write in a vacuum, you know, also try to collaborate with people, because you never know, some of the best gems can come out of that.
Were there any collaborations that there was a little bit of friction, or was it all easy flowing and energetic? Why is that?
Oh, I was like a sponge, man. I was like a sponge. I was like a little kid.
Yes.
You know, I was just happy to be in a room with somebody that can show me the way. I'm from Cape Town, you know, I'm writing from my Cape Town perspective. It was kind of nice to sort of meet somebody like my partner, Jolyon Skinner. He was like a lyricist, you know, I mean, his focus was like lyrics. When I give him a melody and I'll give him an idea, you know, like Sarah, Sarah, you know, I got a song called Sarah, Sarah, and I played these changes for him on the piano. And I started singing it, Sarah, Sarah, dun, 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 dun. Yeah. So he would like take those mms and ha's and put words to them, okay. You know, put a lyric to them, you know. It's so cool just like for me to have met people whose just their job is writing lyrics. We are not all supposed to be producers, you know. We're not all supposed to be arrangers. There are people who are really, that's their gift. That's their strong points, you know. So I've learned early on that just because I can work my computer in my studio and dial my sound, it doesn't make me an engineer or it doesn't make me a producer. I think it's better if I'm just the artist performing, because I'm a performer.
From the perspective of a young kid coming from Cape Town, Durban, Johannesburg, and then going to the international stage, and then you collaborate with the likes of Patti LaBelle, Regina Bell, Pointer Sisters, George Benson. Was there ever moments when you were in the room with these people who were like, what's happening right now? Is this actually happening? Am I actually here?
I you know what? I am still having surreal moments because I remember sitting with Stevie Wonder.
Yeah.
As a matter of fact, I remember him calling me.
Okay.
And I remember I was in my kitchen and the phone rang and I just didn't know the number because it had a weird, you know, Stevie's got codes, whatever. I picked up the phone and it was Stevie Wonder, my childhood hero. My childhood hero is on the phone. It's like Jesus is on the phone. What do you do? Throw the phone down? You know? Run away? You know? And like, I couldn't believe it. I just kind of had a very surreal experience. I always treasure that because it means that I recognize and respect these artists so much. I've been in the room with a lot of people. I think for me, like being in the room with Nelson Mandela and Desmond Tutu was like that moment where I didn't know what to say to Nelson Mandela. I just said, thank you. I love you. I said two words. I love you and thank you. That's all I said. And after I sang for him, I sang for him like, you know, you and I talk like this. I sang like Amazing Grace on his 94th birthday in Cape Town. You know? And after I sat down, next to him was his wife. And on the other side was Sharon Stone and Robert De Niro and, you know, Mariah Carey. And it was just creepy, full of people. And I sang Amazing Grace. And after I sang it, I just walked up to him, said, "I love you." I kind of hugged him from behind and I said, "I love you and thank you." That's it. I didn't have, and it's the same way with Stevie Wonder. I mean, but nowadays he'll call and FaceTime me. You know, one day he FaceTimed me and I thought, wow, this is crazy. And he just FaceTimed me just to like chit chat. You know, he's eating Chinese food, you know, slipping noodles. And I'm like, what is going on? So it was like a very humble. I mean, I come from humble beginnings. I know that this stuff is for all South African artists and musicians that I speak for is, you know, for us, it's America is so huge, so big, and the fruit is big, the breads are big, the meat is big. So kind of like coming from Cape Town, I was like, the first time I arrived in New York, I went to like a burger place and I said, "Excuse me, can I have a hamburger?" The guy's like, "What's that?" You know,
Yo,
what's
that's how
that?
they're on New York, yeah.
And I'm like, you know, "Yeah, I just want a hamburger. What do you want on the burger?" I said, "Man, well, whatever it comes with. What kind of cheese do you want?" I said, "What kind of cheese? Nobody's ever asked me in Cape Town what kind of cheese do I want." We just eat the freaking burger, man. Just give me the hamburger. You know what I mean? So it's very humbling to me. Seriously, I don't take it lightly.
The reason also I was resonating with you because now I've been doing these interviews now for 2 years, and you are my 118th person that I'm interviewing. And it's from artists from all around the world, all these places. And again, I become like friends with them, and I've got a few of them on WhatsApp, and we're chatting. I'm like sitting like, I'm just chatting with this person who I've had their CDs with since I was little. What is happening right now?
See, you understand the feeling. It's like last weekend I was in Florida. I was doing a show, two shows, one in Florida, one in Maryland in the East Coast. And when I got to Florida, it was Marcus Miller on stage with David Sanborn. Tripped me out completely, just completely freaked me out. Then I go to Capitol Jazz, and then Marcus comes on stage and plays. He just invited himself to play with me. Now, this is a cat I've listened to for years, man. So can you imagine, just like, here I am on stage with this guy and we are just having a blast. And so the next day we wake up at like 4 a.m. in the morning, get on a plane at 6 o'clock, fly to Maryland, Capitol Jazz Festival. We're sitting in the lobby. Who walks through the lobby is, you know, George Benson, just checking out of the hotel. I'm there chatting with him. And then I see PJ Morton and I'm like, "Oh my God. Okay. All the stars just coming out. Pimo Bryson starts walking out and I'm like, man, this is a day. This is a feast for me. And I'm going to take the advantage of saying hello to everybody."
Exactly. But you know what the thing is, another thing, and my colleagues and friends laugh at me because I've got this concept that it's not literal, but figuratively, we all use two-ply toilet paper. No one's got gold-plated toilet paper. So whenever I'm getting into an
Find
interview,
that person, let me know.
so when I'm speaking to you the same way I speak to the lady at the Checkers counter, the same way I speak to everyone equally because I believe that we are all equal. We all have red blood. We all use two-ply toilet
Absolutely.
paper. That what helps me in those situations to like, okay, there's Jonathan. He's using two-ply. I'm using two-ply. Let's go say hi, howdy doody.
Well, you know, sometimes for me, I always check myself with certain celebrities because you don't know what to expect. Like I was like that with Stevie Wonder. I was like, "I hope he's nice because I've loved him my whole life. I hope he's a cool guy, you know." And when I met Stevie, he was just exactly what he is who he is. And what really tripped me out even the most was when he invited me to the studio, his studio. And so I go to the studio, you know, and I walk inside and I'm there an hour early, of course, you know, and he comes in the 6 foot, he's tall, you know, he walks in with his wife and, he can sense me. He sensed the vibe. And he said, "Hey, JB, hey, Jonathan." And of course, I'm already melting, like, "Oh my God, man, I can't believe this is happening to
Yeah.
me, man. I really can't believe." But I observed, my eyes went all over the studio. I mean, this guy's studio was like a piece of history.
Yeah.
I mean, monumental history of gear, microphones and pianos that are from 1950 or so, I mean, vintage gear,
Yes.
and it has this library against the wall, like stacked up to the roof, of books and memorabilia and two Steinway grand pianos side
Wow.
by side, and an old organ, like a B3 church organ, two Fender Rhodes, like stuff that he, and the drum kit, where he has his drum kit. And I was like, man, this guy's world is so big. I came home that night. I told my wife, I said, "Babe, this guy's world is so big. Some of us are not even, cannot even fathom, It's like, it's like somebody once said to me, some people, they think they're on the mountain when they're standing on a hill. But
Yes.
when you really see people on the, when you see people on the mountain, like Stevie, me, when I walked into that room, I was like, wow, man, this guy, his world is big, man. I'm inside it, and I'm sitting and vibing with him, and he's playing me four songs from his new record. And I guess I always want to feel this sense of this little boy who always loved and appreciated things, I don't ever want to feel like it's, just a normal day. I don't want to do that. I pray never to be that way. As a matter of fact, I told my manager that last night. I was singing at a charity event in Beverly Hills. And I told her, I said, just remind me to stay humble, okay? Because these people that I just sang for are really good people. They really care about me. To ask me every year to come and participate in their charity events, So yeah, man, it's funny because you talk about toilet paper. I just did a cruise with Dave Koz.
Yes.
And we were in Europe, in Barcelona, Portugal, Spain, and Casablanca,
Ah.
So, but the when you it's Dave Koz and friends, so the ship has all Dave Koz memorabilia everywhere, like the carpet in the elevator says Dave Koz, like the flag over the ship says Dave Koz. So I made a joke on stage. I said, if Dave Koz has toilet paper with his face on it, I'm not doing this cruise.
That's funny.
If your name is on this toilet paper, Dave, we are best friends. But I just told him, he laughed so hard. He said, "Man," I said, "I'm sure somebody's considering that right now,
It'll still be two ply
It's still be too fly, exactly. It's still be too fly from Checkers.
from Checkers, yes. So for the international listeners out there, Checkers is a South African supermarket, just to keep you in the
Like Ralph's here in LA.
There we go. So Jonathan, you mentioned you did the charity show, you did the cruise show, you did the jazz festival. What keeps you going to get back on that stage? Like, okay, I'm going to get back out there and do my thing. What is that motivation? What do you enjoy about it?
If it's the only thing you were born to do, do it. That's what I was, this is what I was born to do. I know it. It's the only thing I know.
Okay.
I don't know anything else. I know from the age of five, as a little boy, when they put me on stage for the first time and I sang Delilah by Tom Jones in the civic hall in my community on a Friday night or Saturday night, and people threw money on the stage because they loved my performance. I felt noticed. I felt like somebody noticed me. And I realized what keeps me going, to answer your question in another way, is this, is knowing that I make people happy. That keeps me going. Knowing that that people's lives are deeply affected when I'm performing, and there's always a sense of spirituality, a sense of purpose behind what I do. And that became clearer and clearer to me as older as I got. And the more I performed in different parts of the universe, I realized I became emboldened because of my faith to just stand up there and unequivocally be unashamed of what it is I'm supposed to do. And that is to make people happy. I know that. And to speak truth to power on the stage, or even not on stage, but to speak truth to power, and from a place of love and a place of grace and a place of gratitude. I'm the baby of a family that grew up in a shanty house, a sun case, in Cape Town. We cleaned our own toilets, and we had an outhouse for a toilet. We had to dig
Yes.
a hole. I came from the very, very humble beginnings. And so it's so humbling that God gave me this gift and I get paid for it. I get to see the world. I get to stand on the stage in Indonesia and sing, say my piece when it's my turn. And they play. They don't pay me to sing. They pay me to travel. That's because the singing part is for me, the gig is fun. The gig is fun and the gig should be fun. It's the traveling that's a pain. You lose your passport or you're delayed or you don't get to the gig on time. You get to the gig and nothing's working and you have to cancel the gig because nothing's working. I've had that happen a few times where you get to the gig. We played in Dallas one time, a couple of months ago, and we did the sound check. And then we, after sound check, back to the hotel. Then we went back to the gig, and nothing worked. So the gig was canceled. 2,000 people had to get their money back. So we're going back this month to go do the same show in Dallas.
Oh my word. The thing is that all these things happen for a reason. We count on technology too much sometimes, and sometimes it's just like the universe, technology, whomever, whatever, saying, it's not happening today.
Well, I know. I mean, I'm old school, man. Back then, in Cape Town, you just had an amp plugged in. You didn't have monitors. No, you just had these two speakers and a microphone and the little what Shure head that you plugged your mics into one after the other. And that was your gig. But I mean, to me, I know this is. That's what keeps me going is seeing the tears in people's eyes. People be crying. People worship people, not me, but people feel, they feel a sense of liberty and they feel a sense of grace and spirituality coming from the stage. And that's really why I just know this is the only thing I have. This is the only thing I am is music. I am just music. I'm not anything else. I'm not a doctor. I'm just music.
I love this game. And I recognize if I had to ask you this question in 2 days, 2 hours, 2 months, I know your answer will be different every time. And I recognize that. I'm not saying favorite, but if you had to push play to five songs by other artists once we've finished this interview, what would those five songs be and by whom?
Okay, five songs. Sting, number one. I'll say Fragile. I'll pick Annie Lennox. Why? I'll pick Stevie Wonder with My Sharia Moore. I'll pick Earl Klugh, Living Inside Your Love. I'll pick one more, one
Yes,
more.
one more, one more.
I'll pick Don't Give Up, Peter Gabriel, and what's the other singer with him?
Kate Bush, isn't that Kate? No.
Kate Bush.
Yes, Kate Bush, yes.
Yeah, Don't Give Up. There you go.
Jonathan, the podcast is listened to throughout the world. So as a final message to the audience, what would you like to say?
Well, first of all, I'd like to say I'm grateful to be above ground. Thank you. I'm grateful for health and strength and for grace, mercy. I'm grateful for love and family and friends and my grandchildren. I'm grateful to have to be loved. I think those are the most important things to me. I hope it is to my fans too. I think I'm here because also of hard work and sacrifice. But those that endure to the end will receive a crown. So to all your listeners and to all of the people listening to me, this is a race, not, this is not a marathon. This is a gentle, slow-paced race. I don't know what pace everybody's running in, but for me, I'm 61. I'm grateful to still be alive. I should have been dead. But I'd say to all your friends and people watch listening to me today, I'm grateful for those things that I just mentioned earlier, and the fact that this is about enduring and perseverance and patience, because that the stuff that's behind me, they'll come. The gold records and the awards will come. Just don't climb over people's heads to get it. Don't trample on people to get it. Let grace be your guide. Let love shine the way. Let peace make you feel comfortable. And always write your own songs. Write your own music and tell people your story. Why the songs you are writing? What does it mean? Where you're from? And so I'm from Cape Town. I know Pobuti. I know Bunny Chow. I know Ruchi and Carrie. I know Biltong and Boerewors. I know my story. Of the five things I just mentioned, I know my story.
Yes.
So know your story, everybody. I love you guys a lot. I mean, I hope that you're hearing my heart in a big way. You know, that's where I reside. Yeah.